Om Ganatamananda Sya Janandana Sulakaya Saksu Sumilatan Zenitasmai Sri Yudhavinama Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Zenabhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sapanandikam Vantukaputubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayubhacha Patitanam Pamanidhyo Vaisnavidhyo Namo Namah. And this is the first verse of this 21st chapter. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. To whom?
Maharaj Prickett. Maharaj Prickett is very close to the end of his life at this point. Just a few days from the end. And this is what his meditation is upon. He has not eaten for perhaps, or drunk water or slept for 5 days. And he's fully enlivened in his Krishna consciousness. He's feeling neither tired, nor weak, nor hungry, nor thirsty. He's enwrapped in experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna because he's hearing from such a qualified speaker, and he himself is so qualified due to his devotion. So, first, it's going to describe Sukadeva describes the Vrindavan forest. As we've just heard the description of the forest in the autumn, so, and the rainy season, and then we'll get into the pastime. So, please repeat, we'll chant the first verse. Sri Sukuvacha Itam Sarat Satajalam Padmakara Sugandina Nyavachad Vayunavatam Vayunavatam Sago Gopalako Chuta. So Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. So he said, "Itam sadat satya jalam, itam thus, in this way, the Vrindavan forest." He's describing the forest of Vrindavan and what it manifests for the pleasure of Krishna in the autumn season. Because the Vrindavan forest is the setting on which all the pastimes take place. And the Vrindavan forest is not made of the material elements. It is made of the Krishna's Sandini Shakti, and it is sweetened by Ladini Shakti. So it manifests perfectly for the pastimes to take place, for the sweetness, just like if there's a drama and you're going to have a very romantic scene in the drama, and you have to have the stage set properly. So this stage or the Vrindavan forest is fully conscious. Every aspect of the forest is conscious. And each aspect of the forest is imbued with devotion for Krishna. And each aspect of the forest wishes to make its devotional offering to Krishna. So thus, Sarat, Satyajalam. Sarat means, in the Sarat season, means the autumn season or the fall season. So late September, October, early November, that time of the year. And of course it's the opposite of, but those are very pleasant here in the southern hemisphere too. Yes, those months, neither too hot nor too cold. So sarat, itam sarat satya jalam. Satya means very clear and clear, and jalam means jal, water. So the water during that time in the lakes, in the rivers, the kuns, the ponds, It was very, very, very clear. When it's rainy during the autumn, during the rainy season, everything becomes muddy. But then, in the autumn, everything becomes very, very clear and peaceful and settled. So itam satat satajalam padmakara sugandinam. Padmakara means that that the lakes all were filled with the padma, or the lotus flowers. So these scenes are perfect for the pastimes that take place, and they're also perfect for the devotees to meditate upon. So all those lakes that were filled with clear water, they were filled also with the padma, the lotus flower, and sugandhinam. And the very sweet fragrance emanated from these lotus flowers. Nyavasad. So he entered. So that he entered is going to come up later. That goes to the last line actually, in the poetic form of the verse. So he entered. He, of course, means Krishna. Vayunavatam. He entered. And vayanam, vatam, means everything was cool, because at the beginning of the autumn season, it's still warm during the day, and then gradually, day by day, it gets a little cooler. So it's still warm in the day. And vayuna, there was a breeze, vatam, that was just adding carrying the sweet fragrances of the lotus flowers and the moisture from the clear water of the lakes. Everything was fragrant. Everything was beautiful. There were flowers everywhere. So, and the atmosphere was surcharged with ecstasy, actually, because Nyavasad, Sa go gopalako achuta. So he entered with the go, the cows, gopal, with the cowherd boys, gopalaka. So achuta entered this forest that was fragrant with the lotus flowers, and was cooling with the soft breezes and sweet breezes blowing off the clear lakes. So here is the translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, thus the Vrindavan forest was filled with transparent autumnal waters and cooled by breezes perfumed with the fragrance of lotus flowers growing in the clear lakes. Sometimes, even in Perth, but it happens in Vrindavan too, you're just walking somewhere, and especially it happens in Vrindavan even in a wonderful way, that you're walking somewhere and suddenly a breeze comes and it's carrying the fragrance of some faraway flowers, and you can't even see where these flowers are because they're far away, and the breeze just passes you by, and suddenly the whole atmosphere, or the consciousness rather, is transformed in a wonderful way due to the sweet fragrance of the flowers carried by the breeze. So in this beautiful setting, Achyuta, the infallible Lord, accompanied by his cows, Sa, Go, Gopalako, Achyuta, and cowherd boyfriends, Gopalaka, they entered that Vrindavan forest. We'll read first the comment of Srila Sanatana Goswami to this text. So we're actually very fortunate to even have the opportunity to speak and hear about Krishna. It is very rare in this world. And if even this insignificant, we don't want to offend Perth, but this insignificant city with its 1.5 million people, How many people at this very moment in the whole city are talking about Krishna and hearing about Krishna, wanting to hear about Krishna? Not very, very many. Maybe there's a few other devotees sitting in their houses hearing something or reading something, or perhaps a few pious people in the city reading their religious scriptures or something, or praying. But so, so, so few, what to speak of being able to hear about Krishna directly. So very, very, very fortunate. Let our minds be captivated by the sweet fragrance and beautiful Vrindavan scene with Achyuta, with beautiful Krishna entering that forest along with the cows and the cowherd boys. So Srila Sanatana Goswami says, having described the autumn, now the particular pastimes of the Lord in that season, just as were described during the rainy season, are stated, beginning to be stated by the words itam, continuing to the rest of this chapter. Thus, first of all, the qualities of the forest are related in terms of its water being charming and its giving full shelter to the wind, and that forest's being paraphernalia for the Lord. It is being used very, very willingly to please Krishna. And this is the qualification for everything, every person, everything in existence in Vrindavan. Everything has no other desire than to be used for the pleasure of Krishna, to make their offerings for Krishna's pleasure. So Sanatana Goswami says the forest is going to be described in the first verse and a half. Thus, the charming quality of the water and its being clear are self-explanatory, since when water is free from contamination, it naturally exhibits such qualities. The qualities of the wind are understood in terms of the sweet fragrance from the abode of the lotuses, namely the lake, which was full of blooming lotuses. So a breeze, a lotus can be seen, a forest flower can be seen, the forest itself can be seen, but the breeze can't be seen. But it can, its presence is understood by what it carries, the fragrance. So it is carrying the fragrance from the abode of the lotuses, namely the lake, which was filled of blooming lotuses. And this implies, Sanatana Goswami says, the coolness of the wind, very, very soft and gentle coolness of the wind, and its fragrance as well. And by the word vatam, it is implied the slow calmness of the forest. So the wind isn't blowing through in great gusts, but very, very gently and softly, cooling the entire forest with the fragrance and perhaps the droplets of water it's carrying from the cool, clear lakes. That's Sanatana Goswami's comment. That's description of the forest. And now, the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So first the setting is described, as we're saying. This chapter describes how the gopis, being pained by Krishna's flute song, repeatedly sing the glories of that flute. And the pain that the gopis are experiencing is a type of transcendental ecstasy, because when they hear the sound of Krishna's flute, all the pastimes of Krishna come to their heart. They also praise the animals, the demigoddesses, and the forests of Vrindavan. Although staying in the village, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining what's going to happen in this chapter. Although staying in the village, Krishna isn't entering the forest, Anvayat, Yavasad. Krishna enters the forest, but the gopis are in the village. The gopis relate what they see through their transcendental eyes of their heart. So Krishna, because of their deep feelings of love and separation, he is manifesting in their hearts, and they're describing what they're seeing. And what we will hear is their Uttama Bhagavat Bhakti, their topmost devotion, because they're going to see everything, everything in Krishna and Krishna in everything. So they will describe what they see through their transcendental eyes of their heart, namely the various charming pastimes Krishna enacts upon entering the forests of Vrindavan. After describing the beauty of the autumn season, Sukadeva Goswami first describes Krishna's entrance into the Vrindavan forest, which is decorated with the sweetness of autumn. And he describes this before portraying the pastimes of Krishna's flute song, which is intimately related to the forest. The wind became fragrant and cool, Padmakara Sugandhinam, by passing over the lotus-filled lakes. Krishna, along with his cows and cowherd boys, entered the forest permeated vatam by the sweetly scented breeze. The word vayuna, wind, is singular instead of plural to indicate a very gentle breeze. So those are the comments of two of the acharyas on the first verse, setting the scene. Now, the second verse. Kusamita vanaraji shushmi bringa dvijakula gusto sarasarin mahindram madupati ravagaya charayanga sahapashu palavalas chakuja venum. So Kusamita vanaraji. Vanaraji means the groups of trees. So Kusamita, flowering amongst the groups of trees. So amongst the trees, all the different flowers on the trees. Shushmi Bringa, there was maddened bees making the sound of that bees make. They And in Vrindavan, every once in a while, and I've only seen one actually, these huge bumblebees, about this big, big and black, you have seen in Vrindavan? Very, you've seen?
Yes.
Very big. Sometimes they're this big. This big, really. So big, and they fly, they buzz around, and these are always going for the pollen in the trees and the flowers and the bushes, and everything in the Vrindavan forest is blossoming and fragrant. So Shushmi Bringa, and the bees are maddened by this, and Dvijakula Gusto. So Dvija means the birds. The birds, there's flocks of birds, and parrots, and swans, and cranes. All the different birds are there, and cuckoo birds making their cuckoo sounds. No crows and ravens, though, they're not allowed. Not at this time. So the sound, so because all the senses are enlivened, the sense of what sense is enlivened by the soft breeze? Well, the sense of touch basically means the skin. And it's carrying fragrance of the lotus flowers. And that means the sense of smell is being enlivened. So this is so wonderful, but it is not meant for our experience of wonder. If we want to enjoy the things of the material world, then we have to stay in this world, in the material world. All this is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And then the sense of hearing is enlivened by what? The sounds of the maddened bees going from flower to flower and buzzing, and the sounds of the many birds. And in Vrindavan to this day, although it's vanishing, it's moving from Vrindavan, early in the morning, the sounds of the birds that you hear, it's incredible. It's like an orchestra, especially during the rainy season. It's like an orchestra. There's birds and peacocks. There's so many different birds. It's so wonderful. And the cuckoos and the pigeons are making their sound. And incredible. The different birds. It's like an orchestra. And this is all accompanying the entrance of Krishna. So the resounding, the lakes, Sara, Sarin, Sarit, the lakes and rivers are resounding with the sounds of the birds and the bees. And the Mahindram, the hills, reverberating between the hills. And of course the most famous hill is Sri Giriraj Govardhan. But there are other hills too. Who knows the name of another hill?
Nandishwar.
And the hill of Lord Brahma with its four peaks that Bhashana is on. All this is in the Vrindavan forest, because the Vrindavan forest extends from approximately the town of Vrindavan all the way to Govardhan hill and past Govardhan to Bhashana and Nandagram. So it is a very big forest. So in this wonderful scene that is enlivening to each of the senses, the Lord of the Madhus, of the Madhu dynasty, because Krishna takes his birth in the Madhu dynasty, Madhubatir Avagaya Charayanga. So he enters this scene along with his cows, Saha Pashupalabalas, and the animals and the cowherd boys. And Krishna, what is he doing? And this, with all this background orchestration, music of the birds and the bees and the fragrance and the gentle breeze, that he begins to kuja venum. He begins to vibrate his flute. So here is the translation. The lakes, rivers and hills of Vrindavan resounded with the sound of maddened bees and flocks of birds moving about the flowering trees. In the company, just like even in our homely Perth, when the gum trees blossom, what birds come and squawk and squawk and squawk and squawk?
Parrots.
The parrots come, and it's so much sounds, so much of that pleasant, the sound of the squawking parrots. Just by that, so the whole forest. Vrindavan is blossoming, and the bees and the varieties of birds are making their sounds. So Krishna, Madhupati, Sri Krishna entered that forest, and while herding the cows, he began to vibrate his flute in the company of the cowherd boys and Balaram. What a scene! And each of the boys is dressed with jewels, with colorful cloth, with turbans on their head, with the minerals and the flowers and the feathers of Vrindavan. And their faces are decorated, and Krishna, and everyone has decorated Krishna's face. And Krishna is holding a stick, and all the boys have their sticks for herding the cows, and their flutes tucked in their belt, and buffalo horns, bugles, and they're blowing and they're playing. And they're jumping from place to place. They're happy. And in this scene, Krishna is playing his flute. Here's the short purport here. as suggested by the word Chakujavanam, Lord Krishna skillfully blended the sound of his flute with the lovely sounds of Vrindavan's multicolored birds. Thus an irresistible heavenly vibration was created. We'll read the comment of Srila Sanatana Goswami to text 2. All of this is described as inflaming of the effect of Cupid, because remember, the center of this particular pastime that's being described in the 21st chapter of the 10th canto is not the cowherd boys playing with Krishna. That's previously been described in the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th chapters like that, 19th chapters. But now we will hear of the love of the young gopis of Vrindavan for Krishna. So everything, they're seeing this due to their meditation, their strong meditation, because of their love for Krishna. They're seeing this not with their eyes as much as in their meditation. So all of this is described as inflaming the effects of Cupid. But it's not the Cupid of this world, because again, this is Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dari Premanam. This is prema, with not the slightest trace of Atma Endriya Priti. There is no selfishness. There is no desire to satisfy one's own senses. The residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, to give Krishna pleasure or to remove any misery, the slightest misery, from a drop of perspiration upon his forehead, to him walking with his soft lotus feet upon the ground of Vrindavan and experiencing being the uncomfort of stepping on a stone or a twig or a seed or a sharp sprout of a seed, an ankur. So the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, they're willing to give up their lives hundreds of times to save Krishna any inconvenience. This is nothing to do with material lust. So therefore it is not very difficult. It is impossible for us to actually understand, but yet when we hear about the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, and how they and their mood, the mood of their love, we get a glimpse of what the spiritual world is like. So let us hear more. So all this is described as the inflaming of the effects of Cupid. By the words, he entered the forest, Yavasad, it is understood that this pastime is eternal because it's in the present tense. He's entering the forest. The connection of the words is that the Lord of Madhu, together with the cows and cowherd boys, the implied part of the statement that is not overtly present is the name of Sri Krishna. The gopis, being unable to explicitly state this noun being described because of the rising within them of a special ecstatic mood based on experiencing wonderful pastimes with him within their hearts. So because of their love for him, they're experiencing pastimes, dealings with him directly, the person Krishna directly in their hearts. Because their hearts, as we heard yesterday, because of that kind of love that they have, Krishna never leaves their hearts. Krishna is always manifested. Do you remember that we read that from that quality of the topmost, the Bhagavad Pradhan? The topmost Uttama Bhagavat. Krishna never leaves their heart. He's captured them, or they've captured him by their love. So what is he doing there? He's not just standing, but he enjoys his pastimes with them. This is the nature of the residence of Vrindavan. So when it says, when Sanatana Goswami has said that they're experiencing pain by hearing the flute, he doesn't mean the pain that we experience in this world it is the longing to be with Krishna caused by that kind of love, and Krishna is actually there in their hearts, continuously enjoying pastimes with him, with them. The same idea will be expressed later in the verse beginning Bahara Pidam, that will come in the fifth verse. The Marus are the Yadavas, because the Yadavas are also in the Maru dynasty. And he is the master, the lord of them, because Madhupati Avagaya Charayanga, he enters the forest herding the cows, and he is Madhupati. He is called Madhupati because he's the lord of the Madhus. He's called Madhupati because Madhu also means honey, and it's a beverage. And the particular characteristic of Madhu, honey, is that it is very, very, very sweet. So Krishna is called Madhu because he is so sweet. He is sweet to look at, his words are sweet, his pastimes are sweet. So there is a very nice verse that Bilamangala Thakur says that uses that word Madhu many, many, many times. Maduram, maduram, vapo asya vibhur, maduram, maduram, badanam, maduram. So that means that maduram, maduram, vapo asya vibhur, that Krishna's vapu, his body, is sweet, sweet. And then maduram, maduram, vadanam, vadanam, maduram. Sweet, sweet, sweet. First line has two sweets. Second line has three. Maduram, maduram, vadanam, maduram. His face is sweet, sweet, sweet. Madhu gandhi mridu smittam etaroho. But the sweetest of all is his smile. His face, his body is sweet. His face within the body is sweeter. And his smile, it is like the fragrance of honey. It is a very gentle smile. I can see how gentle and subtle it is, like the fragrance of honey. Maduram, 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 maduram. Sweeter than the sweetest of the sweetest is Krishna's smile. And also Madhu, because Krishna is called Madhupati, because he's the lord of the Madhus. He's the lord of the sweetness, he's the lord of the Madhu dynasty, and he's also, Madhu also means the spring. So he's the lord of the spring because of all seasons. The spring is the sweetest season. Everything is in blossoming in the spring. So the Lord is the master of the Maru dynasty, which carries the idea that even though it is not possible for him to engage in such activities as herding the cows, because the Marus and the Yadus, they're Kshatriyas, they're warriors, they're kings, his doing so nevertheless is the special symptom of the ecstatic transcendental love of his loving affection for his devotees. Madhu is a particular type of intoxicating beverage, and he is the master of that, which indirectly implies that the season brought forth intoxicating beverages and also was itself intoxicating. Avagaya means entering within, which hints at the transcendental fact of Krishna's entering within everything. Together with the animals and the cowherds, as well as with Lord Balaram, means that all of them were also playing flutes. So what a scene was going on in this wonderful forest. Then, like the stage is set, and then the hero enters with the cast of characters. The hero is Madhupati. Beautiful, beautiful Krishna. He's playing the flute. The cows are there, the boys are there in this beautiful forest. Or else, the connection of the idea is that he was tending the cows in the company of the animals and the cowherd boys. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, as Krishna Madhupati entered Avagaya, the forest with its mountains, its lakes, rivers, and flowering groves, he skillfully blended his flute song, Chakuja Venam, with the lovely sounds of the Vrindavan forest, chirping birds and buzzing bees. The word Madhupati means the Lord of Spring, the month of Madhu. The inference is that when Krishna, the personification of spring, entered the forest in the autumn, the forest became beautiful with spring flowers. Everything sprouted for Krishna's pleasure. Would you like to go to Vrindavan? It is very appealing and attractive. Krishna went along with Balaram and the cowherd boys, Sapashu Palabala, to herd the cows, Godcharani. But it is not mentioned that they played here, that they played flutes. So here, Vishwanath said, only Krishna played the flute. Therefore, the Venu Gita, song of the flute, and title of this chapter, which is called, in Prabhupada's translation, the Gopis glorify the song of Krishna's flute. It came from Krishna's flute only. So, what is the stage that's been set? The wonderful Krishna has entered. And now it's going to move forward, and Krishna begins to play his flute. Now the heroines, or the gopis, are going to be described. Tad braja striya ashutya venu gitam smarodayam kaschid paroksham krishnasya sa sakibhyo anvavanayan. So notice, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So tad brajastriya ashutya. So the ladies in the cowherd village, so they were not in the Vrindavan forest. They were miles, kilometers away in the village. But yet, tad braja striya ashutya venu gitam. When they heard the song or the sound of Krishna's flute, it traveled all the way from the Vrindavan forest and entered their ears and called them and pulled them forcibly, their minds, to Krishna. Venu gitam smarodayam. So it gave, smara means like lust. But it is, again, it is not lust. This is the highest form of love. And this is what keeps Krishna Vrindavanam Pratyajam Padamekam Nagachati. It keeps Krishna captured within the land of Braja. He cannot leave, take one step outside of Vrindavan due to the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So Venu Gitam Smarodayam, when they heard the sound of the flute, their smara, their love for Krishna became aroused, because this is the ecstasies. It's not just static. It is ecstatic, and there are varieties. Continuous. There are waves. The ocean or bhakti ras. We know that the book Nectar of Devotion, the actual Sanskrit name of the book, which Prabhupada gave a summary study of as the Nectar of Devotion, is called Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. The nectar, rasa, bhakti, the nectar of bhakti ras, the ocean of the nectar of bhakti ras. It is like an ocean, and on this ocean There are many waves. There's big waves, there's small waves. And this is the different rasas, or the different manifestation of the exalted devotee's relationship with Krishna. It is not just when we think of love, we think of it in terms of it's being just love, it's one thing. But actually the great rasa acharyas, the great teachers of the mellows of rasa, have described what love for Krishna is in great, great, great detail. And all the varieties, all the causes, all the manifestation, all the mixtures, because it is a great science, and it is something that we should apply our mind to in due course, the science of Krishna consciousness, because there is nothing else to be gained. In fact, there is nothing else to be gained. Prema pamartoman. What else will we gain in this world that we will take with us when the body falls down to the earth in its death throes? What will we take with us? Will we take our financial situation, our financial statement with us? Will we take our house? Will we take our car? Will we take our pet dogs and birds with us, and pet fish? Pet fish? Yamo. Very good. We won't take anything with us. We won't even take our bodies with us. But we will, whatever advancement we make in Krishna consciousness, that's what we take with us. And whatever impressions we have and all the material desires we have, we'll take those with us, and they will cause our next body. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, he describes that the gopis, the gopis, after hearing the flute, they begin to describe to each other about Krishna. They began to talk about Krishna to each other as their love for Krishna is arising in their hearts. So, kaschid paroksham Krishnasya. Their paroksha means hidden or privately. They begin, because of the love in their hearts, they begin to, with sasakibhya, to their intimate companions, anavanayam. They begin to describe about Krishna. They cannot, it is coming out of their hearts and it naturally emanates from their mouth, but to their most intimate private sakis or friends, they begin to talk about Krishna. Here's the translation to the third verse. When the young ladies in the cowherd village of Braja heard the song of Krishna's flute, which arouses the influence of Cupid, some of them privately began describing Krishna's qualities to their intimate friends. So we won't read any of the comments on this verse. We'll just go on to the next verse. Tadvarnaitam rabda smarantya Krishna chastitam nasakam smaravegena Vichepta manaso nripa. Nripa means, O king. So Sukadeva is speaking this to King Pariket. So tadvanayitam arabda. So beginning vanayitam means to describe, arabda, beginning to describe. Smarantya Krishna chastitam. They're beginning to describe what they're remembering, and that's Krishna Chaitanyam, the activities of Krishna. Because all day long, all night long, all morning long, they're simply thinking and talking about Krishna. Remembering him, looking for him, thinking of how they can serve him. They have no other desire, they have no other interest, because this is the nature of their love. This is the speciality of their love. It is simply focused upon Krishna. So, Smaranya Krishna Chaitam. So remembering Krishna, Chaitam means activities, Krishna's activities, Nasakam, Smaravegena, Nasakam. They were incapable of keeping Smaravegena because of the rise of their love for Krishna. Upon hearing the flute, Vichepta Manason Ripa. Vichepta means agitated, disturbed. When Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadamani describes there are two flaws that we fall into when we chant japa. One is called vichepta, the other is called laya. Laya means the influence of the mode of ignorance when we get sleepy. And vichepta, caused by the mode of passion, is disturbed. The mind becomes agitated and disturbed, and we cannot hear Krishna's holy name. But here the same word is used, vichepta, disturbed. But this type of disturbance is on a completely different level. It is completely transcendental. And it is an arising of love for Krishna. It is the udipan, or the stimulant of the flute of Krishna, has caused a wave to arise in the ocean of their ecstatic love for Krishna, disturbing the otherwise peaceful shore of this huge lake of their ecstatic love for Krishna. And that's the disturbance. It's an increase of the rasa, of variety in the taste, the ecstatic taste they're feeling in their love for Krishna. Because there's unlimited, just like if you watch the ocean, there's this wave comes along, and then it moves and hits this wave, and when the two waves come together, when the two swells come together, then there's a bigger swell for a moment, and then that goes down, and then another aspect of a wave comes, and it moves. It's always in movement. It's peaceful for a little while, then something comes along, another wave, this type of a movement and flowings and currents. So this is what the consciousness is like. And when the consciousness is filled with bhakti rasa, every movement and every wave causes a different variety of ecstasy. When the consciousness of the jiva is taking shelter of the material energy, there is still always continuous movements and waves in the consciousness. You know, we're walking down the street and something exciting happens. A car comes and honks the horn very loudly, and our consciousness doesn't. There's a wave in it. There's a disturbance called, but everything ultimately. Every wave of consciousness in the material world causes misery ultimately. But this is something completely different. Vichepta manaso nripa. O king, their minds were disturbed by this wave of ecstasy produced by the sound of Krishna's flute. So here is the translation. The cowherd girls began to speak about Krishna. Tadvani tamarabda. Arabda means they began to describe. But when they remembered his activities, O king, the power of Cupid disturbed their minds, and they could not speak. They were incapable. They began to speak. But due to the emotion they were experiencing just by hearing the flute, no words could come from their mouth. We'll read a little bit from Srila Sridhar Swami's comment on this fourth text. Was
he just says vichepta manasa means those whose minds were agitated. Sanatana Goswami says the form arabdha is the same. Arabdha means they began. Is the same means he gives a Sanskrit explanation. But when something is begun, they began to speak. Thus, it is as a matter of course to be thought that what that which they began would be finished. But still, they were not able to finish it. They could not speak, even though they began to speak. The reason for this is stated that they were remembering, pursuing the activities of Cupid, the desires pertaining to a particular remembrance of Sri Krishna, which attracted the minds of them all. Which activity mainly consists of playing the flute. The flute affected their minds so deeply. Or else, it became some activities which will be described later on. Alternately, some of them engaged in describing, while some of them, although attempting to describe, were incapable. The address of King is spoken out of distress by Sukadev, because he was feeling special sentiment himself in relationship to this, because Sukadev is ultimately a resident of Vrindavan, as Pilajiva Goswami describes in Gopal Champu. Or else, it is addressed to the king by Sukadev when he observed the rising of loving sentiment in the king. The speaker was affected by describing this. The hearer was affected by describing this. So in order to hold him back, he said, O king, to bring him down, to ground him, so he could continue. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Shortcoming. When the gopis attempted to describe the song of the flute, they could not do so because their hearts became overcome with strong desires for Krishna. So the next verse, which we won't read today, is a very important verse, mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat many times. It describes what their meditation upon hearing the flute and what they were meditating upon as Krishna was entering the forest. And then the meditations will continue with their own words later on. Okay, thank you very much. Questions or comments? Sanatana Goswami said yes, Vishwanath said no. Later in this verse, in the next verse, it'll say that cowherd boys were chanting the glories of Krishna. But in any case, because sometimes the acharyas will say, this is the inconceivable realm of the acharyas and their comments in our Vrindavan, that everything is possibly true. Sanatana Goswami gave alternative comments. He said that they could be playing the flutes, or it could be that only Krishna was playing the flutes. So sometimes it could be one, and sometimes both, all of them playing the flutes. But even though sometimes the acharyas will say different things, there's no actual contradiction. This is the inconceivable transcendental realm.
Is that according to the
Of the acharyas, it's
their
realization when what Krishna is revealing to them, what they're seeing. It's according to that. Yeah, could be a lot of things, or it could be this is what they're seeing and it seems to be different from what another acharya is seeing. But actually, there's a reconciliation that's an overview, so to speak, that shows that they're non-contradictory. So time could be one of the points in that. Yeah.
Does this actually mean what the gopis are seeing?
That, well, that comes tomorrow. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The acharyas will comment on that.
So far there hasn't been anything seen.
This is their, what they're thinking about.
Not yet. This, so far we've only heard they could not speak. They began to speak. Some of them, Vishwanath said, some of them began to speak and couldn't. Others, Sanatana Goswami, I believe, said that no one could speak. There's different gopis.
This is just the rising of their feelings.
Yeah, just like when something happens, you're describing something and your emotions become choked and you can't speak. So, like that. So the sound of Krishna's flute, there they are in the village and Krishna's away, and a moment separation from Krishna, yugayitam nameshena. Namesha means the length of time it takes for an eye to blink. It feels like a yuga or thousands and thousands of years. So in the midst of this feeling of separation from Krishna, they hear the sound of Krishna's flute in it, and it causes a particular ecstatic element of their ecstatic love to surface in their consciousness.
On one tape and one lecture, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada, and he's describing about this phenomena, how if you, there's somebody that you love, and you think maybe they're coming, and you think, oh, they're at the door, and then you feel, oh, they haven't come. And he's talking about when there's love, there's this yearning. So how much you have to love to have the blink of your eye turn like an inconceivable amount of time.
Yeah, this is the love of the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan. With not a trace of lust.
Selfishness.
Atmendriya priti vancha. Bali, tare bali kam. No lust. No selfishness. No desire to satisfy their own senses or anything like that. This is like gold purified in 100 times in flames. So can we actually understand this? No, we can't actually understand this now. But we can get a glimpse, get a hint. This is the most wonderful thing. This is not of this world. This is something of the spiritual world. And we can see why all the activities and the attempts of love in this world, which are contaminated by so much selfishness, why they fail, because they are not actually love at all. We are longing for love, but we settle for lust. This is the material world. And therefore we remain forever unsatisfied. It also helps when you don't speak Bengali. But yeah, that's Vaishnava culture. You can take that off the tape. But yeah, that's Vaishnava culture. That the desire is to please another. That's why it is. That's what love is. the desire to please another. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Vinodita, Song of the Sukhi jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, War Bhagavatam ki jai.